Sun, Adobe, and Microsoft are going to be duking it out on the web. Each has a solution for making the web a richer and more interactive place. And this competition should be a good thing. Or is it? Ted Neuer joins us this week to explain why it might not be so great. Coming up in the Sparkling Client podcast.
Hello, I'm Eric Mork.
And I'm Monica Mork. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. Here's how it works. You give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. For more information and show notes, see sparklingclient.com. Also, please consider leaving us feedback at the site. We're always looking at ways to make the show better. Now, Eric, Ted's been on our show before. Can you remind our listeners who he is?
Ted is just a crazy good communicator. He has all these great ideas. He sort of synthesizes these ideas out of data that's sort of widely available, data that you or I might have access to. But he comes up with these conclusions that are pretty phenomenal and pretty defensible for that matter too. So he's really an interesting person to talk to, and I'm really glad he's been on our show. He's, you know, he does all this other stuff too, like he's an author and he's a speaker and he's a consultant. And his specialty is sort of, he bridges the world between Java and .NET, and he might be the world's sort of premier expert in that realm. So it's really a pleasure to have him on.
Great. Well, let's listen to the interview now.
So hear me out on this.
Yep.
Maybe the best possible situation is that as we go forward, we have both Silverlight and we have both Flash Flex, and they're sort of competing to sort of drive this innovation. Do you see scenarios where that might happen?
You know, I think definitely for the short term, you know, over the next couple of years, that's what's going to happen. You know, Adobe is going to be looking over its shoulder at Microsoft to sort of figure out what are they doing that we need to be aware of, that we will, you know, change our technology strategy or we will change our marketing strategy or whatnot. Adobe is going to be looking over their shoulder. And as any runner knows, or swimmer or any other racer knows, as soon as you start looking over your shoulder, you're not focused on your race. Mm. You're focused on who's catching up to you. I think that's going to be a distraction to Adobe, which is good for Microsoft. At the same time, Microsoft is going to wrestle with yet again, you know, here's Microsoft. I mean, this will be the common meme across the industry. Here's Microsoft. They're trying to create yet another monopoly. They're trying to create yet another embrace and extend kind of opportunity, right? They're looking to create a new platform that they will then try to own the world through and so forth. And so they're going to have a hard time balancing what they do in Silverlight in terms of the innovation they bring. They're going to have a hard time balancing that against the accusations of monopolistic behavior. Because at this point, you know, anything Microsoft does, if Bill Gates wakes up and says, oh, look, the sky is blue, people will say, Bill's trying to establish a monopoly on the color blue. You know, I mean, they're so hyper scrutinized at this point that anything they do is going to be seen as an attempt at embrace and extend. And even if they're genuinely trying to play nicely with the other kids, nobody will believe them. So that's going to constrain Microsoft's innovation some. But it's interesting because there's an implicit argument that you're making that I'm going to call out explicitly and openly question, which is to say, and having these two systems wrestle with one another is a good thing. I'm not entirely convinced that it is. As bizarre as that seems,
really?
I'm not entirely convinced that that's a good thing. Largely because having lived through the Common Core Wars, having lived through the Java.NET Wars, having lived through, you know, the XML services, web services, where we were all, you know, ostensibly playing along together, I'm not sure that two is much better than one. Mm-hmm. In many respects, I would like to see, you know, a multi-party platform, you know, a multi-party government as opposed to just a two-party government, you know, because that I think, I mean, this is kind of based on experiences with the open source world in the Java space particularly, where people are constantly creating new ideas and new frameworks and new platforms. And it's not so much that any one of them is vastly superior to the others. There hasn't been a complete, you know, even Rails, right? People go on and on and on about how wonderful Rails is. Rails had some interesting ideas, but it suffers from some pretty severe drawbacks as well, which created some idea and innovation, which is now influencing the next generation of web frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
This multiplicity, this multi-party of this multiple stream of innovation, if you will, is, I think, the better for us as developers, because when you get to two platforms, now all of a sudden you start wrestling with, well, which one should we as a company standardize on? Mm. Or you get, well, we can't really choose between one or the other, so we'll support both, which means now we start getting questions like, how do I get a Silverlight effect inside of my Flash application?
Mm.
Or vice versa. And so Flash Silverlight interoperability will become a big deal for a short period of time. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
I'm not sure that two is better than one in that respect.
Right. Now, let's change gears for a moment.
Okay.
And let's talk about smart clients, reapplications, whatever you want to call them, those
right.
apps that execute inside the browser frame. Why do we need them, or do we need them?
Well, I think we need them from the standpoint that, you know, HTML, it has some significant limitations, right? HTML was designed from the very beginning. You read the HTML spec, you can see it there. It was designed from the beginning to allow for basically a least common denominator user interface experience, you know, going across all these different platforms. And then slowly over time, we have tried to extend it and increase it and create additional capabilities and so forth. But at the end of the day, HTML is still basically 3270 with pictures,
mm-hmm.
right? We can do embeddings of binary elements, which, okay, now that gets us streaming video and streaming audio and, you know, great. So it's 3270 with moving pictures. But fundamentally, HTML itself in this, you know, submit response format, it's exactly the way mainframes worked, which in of itself is not bad, but it does put some constraints on the interactivity of the application compared to things like Office, Excel, PowerPoint, Visio, and by that I mean them in their sort of generic sense, not those particular products,
sure.
right? You know, the OpenOffice, the Mac, you know, tool suites, same thing. That degree of instant reactivity.
Mm-hmm.
I click this button and immediately the text turns italic, or immediately the text turns bold. And what we're seeing now is people are looking to Ajax, right, to give you that same kind of capability. You fire up Gmail in your browser, and what you end up with, instead of Microsoft Word, you know, huge and heavy and occupying, you know, umpteen megabytes on your system, you get Internet Explorer or Firefox, huge and expensive and occupying umpteen million megabytes on your desktop. Because those effects, that interactivity, now instead of being written in a native language like C++, now they're being written in JavaScript, and they have to incorporate the different browser behaviors and the DOMs and all that stuff. The net effect is the same, right? People have done measurements on how much memory and CPU time, you know, your browser occupies when running Gmail, and how much CPU time and memory Office occupies, and they come out to about the same.
Really?
Yeah. And so we've basically traded one large monolithic application for another. And so because Google is doing this, you know that there is a certain amount of demand for it. Because Microsoft built Outlook, there's like OA, I can't remember.
Outlook Web Access.
Yeah, Outlook Web Access, OWA. Yeah. And again, same story there, mm-hmm. right? Fire up OWA and son of a gun, it's the same size as Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
you know, or Outlook itself for that matter. So clearly there's a consumer demand for saying, look, when I click a button, I want something to happen immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Not after I send something back to the server and get a response. I want it immediately. And so the demand is clearly there. And Ajax as a technology, I mean, JavaScript, DHTML, whatever you want to call this,
right,
just was not intended. I mean, HTML itself was not intended to give us the kind of interactive effects that people are demanding, you know? And so we have to go someplace else to get some of that kinds of stuff.
Now we're going there and we're getting some of these benefits,
mm-hmm.
right? but we're losing some things in the process, like accessibility, searchability, those sorts of things.
And again, this is, you know, the searchability in particular. You know, people are saying, oh, well, I should be able to Google inside of my rich internet application and have it work. Well, I mean, by the same token, I'd love it if Google could work inside of my Microsoft Word documents and my Excel documents and inside of a running instance of Microsoft Word. That would be awesome. HTML and the web were created to build a distributed hypermedia platform. It's there in Fielding's thesis. I mean, he calls it out explicitly. REST, you know, representational state transfer, was created to support a distributed hypermedia system. Simple and straightforward, right? All of the decisions that he made with respect to REST were done with that end in mind. And the thing that I think we as an industry have lost sight of is the fact that, you know, Word is not a distributed hypermedia application. Word is a word processor. Excel is a spreadsheet. PowerPoint is a presentation tool. Visio is a big graphic layout. You know, people say that's how architects program is in Visio. But however you want to look at it, it's not a distributed hypermedia application. And we kind of need, I think, collectively to step back and say, well, do we want hypermedia? Do we want hypertext? Mm-hmm. Or do we want an application? If we want an application, there are things we're going to lose as a result, right? Google may not be able to search through my compiler. You know, he may be able to search through the compiler files, right? Once Google Desktop Search or Live Search or whatever particular search engine we're running 2 years from now, you know, it may be able to go through the source code and find that stuff. And that's great and wonderful and good, but I don't know that I necessarily want it to do it to the application while it's running, number one, because this is stuff that's still in flux and searching it and how much CPU time am I consuming and that sort of thing. But this also implies that, you know, what we really want is we want Google to open up their search engine to allow searching across different kinds of document types. And that's really a question for Google. That's not really a question for the kind of applications we build, right? So it's really a question of, do we want distributed hypermedia, or do we want an application with workflow associated with it and so forth? And I think when you put it in those lines, when you put it in that particular framework, I think people will start to say, oh, well, yeah, hypertext is good. I like hypertext for certain kinds of read scenarios, read mostly scenarios, right? HTML help, right? That is a beautiful thing. This is why Microsoft went to that as far back as 2000, the CHM files, right? Compiled hypertext files help. That's perfect because I can go back and forth between all these various text topics and, oh, that's wonderful. But not necessarily for filling out and, you know, a purchase order or a journal voucher or, you know, filling out a patient's case record. Or HTML is useful in the distributed hypermedia space. Let's not try to make it all things to all people.
And so that's an interesting line to think about, right? So in read-only scenarios, HTML is going to be great. It's when we have to start pushing information the other way that we have to start thinking about other technologies.
Particularly because a lot of the applications that developers build are, you know, instead of being read mostly, they're write mostly.
Right.
I mean, you think about your classic point of sale system, or you think about your classic, you know, call center application. These are applications that are write mostly. These are, you know, people sitting in the call center. These are people, you know, sitting at a terminal, you know, they're entering information. They're not looking at the information. You know, when I call Hertz to rent a car, that's a write mostly scenario, right? I type a whole bunch of stuff. I get a response saying whether or not I can get the car I want or whether or not I can get a car at all. But 90% of the effort there is in pushing data out as opposed to collecting data back. And those are scenarios that HTML, you know, I mean, I know I'm going to piss somebody off as I say this, but I just don't think HTML is a good data entry format. And this is where, you know, this is where your traditional rich applications make things much easier, you know, in terms of being able to support type ahead. You know, if I've got this massive drop down, if I type the first three letters, so as to be able to pick out, you know, the state in the list of 50 states or whatnot, or have a text field that will just fill it in and I can up arrow or down arrow without having to see all 50 of them.
okay, let's finish up with this.
Okay.
So I have a lot of friends who are Mac developers, or they do development of websites using PHP on the Mac, right?
Okay.
And so we have these standards. You know, HTML is, in theory, you know, a standard. And,
oh, it's
you know,
a standard. I mean, it's clearly the most widely used thing for building a website, right?
Mm-hmm. And so loosely, you know, JavaScript and CSS also have standards. Now, the problem they run into, their biggest headache is that they write these web applications and then they have, you know, the differences, the sort of fuzzy edges at the boundaries of these technologies where it doesn't work on, you know, Opera or, you know, it doesn't work on some browser on the Linux.
Well, just take CSS, right? The way Internet Explorer interprets CSS and the way Firefox interprets CSS can sometimes be radically different.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so now we have Silverlight where conceivably, I mean, you write something one way, and it's going to appear that same way on every platform that displays Silverlight.
Assuming Silverlight works on all the different platforms that you're interested in, yes. I mean, this is exactly the promise that, you know, the JVM and Swing, you know, said, hey, we'll draw all of the components ourselves, and that way we guarantee you they'll render exactly the same way across all the different platforms you care about. And so the parallels there, I think, are just kind of amusing. Right. You know, here we are making the same argument. You know, here is Microsoft, who for years has been, you know, a company that built itself off of the idea that we want to allow the underlying interesting principles of the platform to bubble up. Right. Now they're basically saying, well, we'll create a platform that will help hide the differences between all the other platforms. I mean, you know, there's an interesting thought exercise to be considered, and I won't go through it now, but there's an interesting thought exercise to say, why would Microsoft change that tune? Why would they start looking for ways to create a standard across all these different platforms? And you can spin up lots of different conspiracy theories, or you can, you know, go through it in a very sort of technology only, no politics involved manner. And the truth probably lies somewhere there in the middle. But I think there's a big assumption in the sense that Silverlight will work the same way across all these different platforms, because that was not the Java experience. And so there's, you know, just questioning assumptions there for a second. That's an assumption that I think needs to be held up and questioned, because I'm not a huge Flash expert, but I have been told that Flash doesn't behave the same way across all different platforms, that there are some subtle cases where it's just a tweeny bit different. And Adobe's going to run into this in spades now that they have the Adobe runtime, which sits client-side as opposed to inside the browser. They're going to run into exactly the same kinds of issues that the Java guys ran into, you know.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Sure.
That's an interesting rule of thumb. If we're in a read scenario, HTML is probably okay. But if we're in a write scenario, that's an area where a richer experience is needed. I see what he's getting at, but I hadn't thought of it in that way before. Thanks for listening. Eric and I work for Silver Bay Labs, the company Eric founded. If you want to know more about what we do, see silverbaylabs.org. The music for today's show is used with permission and is from teamyacht.com and magnatune.com. For more information, see the show notes page.